This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. This hour, we bring you a Forever Moccasin Bend conversation. Here in Chattanooga, Forever Moccasin Bend is the fundraising effort led by National Park Partners, starting with opening the gateway that will add park and new visitor amenities at the Moccasin Bend National Archaeological District. Former Congressman Zach Womp led the eight-year effort in Washington to create the district back in 2003. Another person who knows well the history of Moccasin Bend and has helped to shape what it is today is Mickey Robbins, now on the board of National Park Partners. And for decades, Sally Robinson has played a key role in revitalizing Chattanooga's downtown and riverfront development, including three terms in the city council and the long road to Moccasin Bend today. They joined me for a conversation, along with Tricia Mims, Executive Director of National Park Partners. Congressman, Mickey, Sally, Tricia, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Ray. This is amazing.
Very happy to join.
We've talked a lot these past few weeks about a few themes I want to come back to in this longer conversation. And the first is history. There is so much history there when we talk about Moccasin Bend going back for millennia. And it's really like a layer cake. You really can't tell one part of that history without running into another part of that history.
You know, that's one thing, Ray, that fascinated me from the beginning. I'll step back 1 minute to say that the way I got involved in all of this was when the city and the county were trying to make a determination about how to best use the 600 acres on Moccasin Bend that they jointly owned. And they formed a committee. It was called the Moccasin Bend Task Force. And our job was to look at all the alternatives and make a recommendation. And, you know, it was so interesting. In the beginning, there was talk about perhaps there'd be an asphalt plant processing enterprise over there because our industrial base was wobbly in the early 1980s, and this would, you know, sort of revive the economy. But we really quickly came to the conclusion that Moccasin Bend is almost a treasure trove of our local history, and not just our local history, but the history of Southeast Tennessee and indeed the North American continent. And that's because it's been continually habitated for millennia. Over 10,000 years of continual human habitation have occurred there. And so based upon the archaeological treasures that are there, it's been discovered through the years that this is almost, if you will, a time capsule. It's as if it tells the story of how our continent evolved and became what it is today, from prehistory to the contact period when the Spanish explorers came near here and through here, continuing to tell the story in the 1860s of the Civil War that was fought here, a lot of it. So that's kind of a, I guess, a thumbnail sketch of what we found out right away when we were asked to make a recommendation. So we're so thrilled that it is now a national park.
Well, and there were a lot of steps in between that recommendation from the task force and actually making it come to fruition with the National Park Service.
Yeah.
There were a lot of folks that had to do a lot of grassroots organizing and working through all the channels. And Congressman, you really gave an excellent outline of kind of the civics lesson, if you will, of what it took to have a community in favor of a park to actually getting it through Congress was no small feat.
You know, though, Ray, I love the way Sally set up some of the history going back just a generation to the Moccasin Bend Task Force and the whole process there. But, you know, I remember when I first got elected to Congress and I went to Congress, and they tell you there's only 11,000 people in the history of the country that have had the privilege of serving in Congress. And then you sort of say in your mind, well, what a unique opportunity that I get to do this. So in your mind, you say, what do I want to be involved in? So that my little piece of the history, your life as part of this history, has meaning and has purpose. And that's where when Mickey and all of the friends that have been at this effort for a long, long time, when they came to me and told me this story, immediately I wanted this to be part of my little slice of history, because we all have that and we all get to choose how do I want to be involved in this story? And is there any way I can contribute to it? And that's exactly what we all have done together. And so it's one of those synergy supernatural things, to be honest with you, that what we've done together is much better than anything we could have individually done. And it all happened at exactly the right time. You wonder, why didn't it happen in the 50s when Governor Clement was handed the whole thing? And why did it happen later? And it was all supposed to happen in the way that it happened now. And as I said in our last session, for whoever it was to come up with the Forever campaign, there's not many things in your life you get to be involved in that actually are forever. But when you actually are putting a stake in the ground of the history that's happened in a place, in this nexus between people, places, and things, and you think back on Vision 2000, Sally, when we actually focused on Chattanooga and people, places, and things, Mox and Ben is where people, places, and things all meet, and we all got to be a part of this. So, I mean, it is a supernatural kind of thing, what we've been involved in and what's going to become, and it's not going to go away, ever. We're going to be long gone, and this Forever Mox and Ben will be a legacy that we all get to play a little part in, which, I mean, that's a gift in life when you actually are given the privilege of being involved in something that is there long after you're gone. Wow.
Zach, I thought it was tremendous. I think it was in the August of 1995 that several of us from what became the Friends went out to the AIM Center. I think you were on the board of the AIM Center at the time. And we went out and presented the idea to you in a little side room there. And it took us about 5 minutes of telling you about what we had in mind with the National Park there before you said, this is a great idea. And I'm going to make this one of my signature projects. And I thought it was just wonderful that you were so decisive and so passionate behind it. Because just, you know, to retrace for a couple of minutes, Adolph Ochs tried to set it aside in 1920, the publisher of the Chattanooga Times and the New York Times. That didn't work. And there was this battle between industrialization and preservation that went on for decades. And people like Will Cummings and Carter Patton, some very distinguished people, tried to make it work. Estes Kefauver, J.B. Frazier, and then McKellar and Kefauver stood behind it. President Truman signed the legislation for the first run in a national park. Governor Browning couldn't make it work. And then, as you pointed out, Governor Clement didn't want to dedicate the money. Anyway, there was this tussle that went on and on and on. And from 1995, I think it took you 7 years, but you got it done and pushed it. And I think it was a wonderful tribute to your diplomacy and expertise. I would spend a day in Washington with you, and I was amazed how you always reached across the aisle and had support and friends that stood along with you on this.
Well, that's one thing, Ray, I want to stop and point out here is we just finished this brutal, awful, ugly campaign cycle in the year 2020, which is just hopefully that never happens again because it's just completely out of bounds. Our tradition in this country is to actually bring people of goodwill together from all perspectives, ideologies, everything, including the Republicans and Democrats. And this is an example of that. I mean, we had President Bush and Fran Minella, the director of the Park Service from the Republican side, the Democrat leadership completely joined together. It's these conservation preservation issues that are basically colorblind on politics, on everything, because it affects all of us. It's all of our heritage. I mean, in fact, all the people that have come across Mox and been throughout this history, they didn't look like us. They did not look like us. So isn't this cool that this one of those things that we still in our generation, we had this kind of cooperation. And you're right, Mickey, it was everybody coming together. But you have to, politics, I used to say, is the art of the possible, Sally. You have to decide what's possible. You know, we wanted a separate unit, and that wasn't possible. You had to be a subunit because of the backlog maintenance. And I praise Alexander, Senator Alexander, for what they did this past year on the great American Treasures Act, the preservation bill that they've done here for the National Park, to get caught up on all their expenses, because you can't invest in new facilities like Mox and Ben infrastructure, visitor center, until you get sort of caught up on the past. And this this late great outdoors bill that they passed and President Trump signed into law, it's a big step towards that. So again, that's where the country comes together, and we sure do need to now.
Yeah, I was just going to say, to follow up on what Zach was alluding to, the location of the bend is such a unique asset for our city. This is essentially right across the Tennessee River from downtown Chattanooga. Literally, you can walk over to Moccasin Bend from our downtown, from the aquarium area, all through that riverfront development, as well as North Shore. It's just an easy bike ride, walk, or eventually the new Moccasin Bend Gateway is going to be built. And this has already been designed, and it's in review processes right now, that we will, in effect, extend the Tennessee Riverwalk along Manufacturers Road and then over onto Hom Road, that will then come to our new orientation visitor center, soon to be visitor center someday. But in the meantime, there's a huge amount of infrastructure that is going to come into play there, that as to go back to what Congressman Womp says, these partnerships, you know, you've got the city, the county, the state of Tennessee, you've got your federal government, you've got your national park involved, and really a combined effort to make sure that this is done correctly. And that's one thing I am thankful for, and that is it's taken us a long time, and Mickey can attest to this because his family for decades has advocated for this. He's got cousins and aunts that worked on this project decades ago, but we're doing it right. As Zach keeps saying forever, and Tricia, our executive director, has done a marvelous job in bringing us to this and creating the platform for what's going to be there for our generations to come. And it's going to be a great asset to our downtown. Again, just across the river.
I'm struck listening to each of you in the past few minutes by the sense of collaboration. Collaboration can happen elsewhere and does happen elsewhere. But as somebody who made Chattanooga my home fairly recently, there's a particular rhythm to this spirit of collaboration, whether we're talking about the creation of the Moccasin Bend National Archaeological District or this Forever Moccasin Bend campaign or other efforts in this area going back generations.
A lot of people talk about Chattanooga's renaissance from being a dirty city in the 60s to being this incredible place today. And I always draw the analogy that, or the reference that the public sector, the private sector, and the philanthropic sector, when they truly come together and the leadership of all three of those sectors commit to the same things, unbelievable things happen. And that happened here. Really, by the time we got to the early 90s, our elected leadership, our philanthropic leadership, and our business leadership were locked into this 20-year strategy of growth sustainably, conservation, doing things right, public places for people to gather in a healthy way, and Chattanooga just boom. And now people are moving from Nashville to Chattanooga. It's like, what? They're moving from Nashville to Chattanooga? Why? The quality of life here. And it happens because of this unity. Now, there are times where you sputter when your elected leadership's not caught up with your philanthropic leadership or business leadership. You have to keep them all intact. That's what I tried to do when I was in office was, and Sally did too on the city council, is to make sure that elected leadership knows what's going on, what the philanthropic leadership's willing to invest in, what the private sector desires, and then you get it done. And you don't get it done based on what's good for me. You get it done what's based on good what's for us. And that's really what happened here. I'd say for 20 years, we were really purring along like that in the 90s and first decade in the 21st century.
It was truly an historic time. And, you know, I think we've had a partner from the very, very beginning, as we go back to the very early 80s when this all began to really get legs once again, the effort to preserve Moccasin Bend and to have it become a national park, a national archaeological district. And that was the Lyndhurst Foundation, because in the beginning, it was hard to ask the elected leadership to invest in something that, even though it was their property, we didn't really know what we were going to be facing, how long it would take. And that initial grant from the Lyndhurst Foundation sort of put us, I guess you'd say, in business. And that little task force had a three-year life. The sunrise was in 1982, so to speak, and our sunset, we would have to have our work complete, was in 1985. And it was to be a 20-year, $20 million effort that would create the Tennessee riverfront into what we came to envision that it could be. Starting out on Moccasin Bend, it wasn't long before we shifted our sights up and down the river, across the river, and realized there was an opportunity here that Moccasin Bend could be lay a cornerstone in what could become an entire riverfront revitalization. So it's been a pivotal place for us, and one that I'm just so pleased that we'll be there forever, as we've said so many times.
Mickey, your thoughts?
My thoughts are that this has great potential. I'd like to follow up on a point that Sally made. You know, this Moccasin Bend is right across the river from the town, and there's very few national parks that have that proximity to an urban area. Most of them are out in fairly remote areas. They're beautiful. They're great. They attract people. But Moccasin Bend is a stone's throw from the downtown, and it provides an opportunity for the urban youth and city people to experience the national park and then to broaden their horizons. And they do it in a way that it's most interesting. It's not just beautiful scenery. It's not just Indians, Native Americans. It's not just Civil War, but it's a whole plethora of things with Mother Nature that are right there at our doorstep. And I think it can broaden the vision of a lot of people as far as what national parks are all about, and then lead them to go to the Smokies and to go to these other places. And then also just as far as education, enriching their understanding of history. So it really is a marvelous opportunity for Chattanooga. And that leaves out the economic impact of overnight stays and business for restaurants and hotels and this and that. So it's just a great project in many, many different ways. It's had a lot to overcome, but thanks to Zach and Sally and some of the rest of us, you know, we pushed pretty hard, but I think it just has many, many benefits to Chattanooga in this area.
Well, Ray, let me follow up there too, because in the next 20 years, this is what you're going to see. I follow this closely. I have a boat on the river, and going around the bend, I take great pride in just knowing the history and feeling the history there. But you're going to see more development. I mean, a lot more development. Just straight across the river at the foot of Lookout Mountain, you've got the Chase and Mallon development. That's all going to be developed in the next 10 years, 15 years. You've got the Horrendicide Jimmy White development on the old Alstom site. It's all going to be developed in the next 10 years. Horrendicide announced another development close to Spring Hill Suites. More condominiums, more housing. So what happens is Moccasin Bend, where we're actually going to take development down, not develop new stuff, but the non-conforming uses are coming out. So what happens is, as the river gets developed around, you know, the Kinsey Hayes on all that property around the bend, in the turn of the bend where 24 heads west, that's going to be developed. There's a marina and more residential development plan there. As that all gets developed and Moccasin Bend is undeveloped and natural, it is like right in the middle of this new development. It's this special, precious place to gather, to breathe fresh air, to actually go through the archaeological history. What a place for education to take place, for the next generation to come and walk public spaces and talk about the different eras from Paleo through the Spanish era, the Civil War, the Native American. Oh, man, right in the middle of all this other stuff. So, and just a walk from town and the river walk spills right into it. It's going to be even better 20 years from now than it is right now.
And that reminds me of a key ingredient through all of this, and that is timing. Now, if those three sectors that you had spoken about earlier, the public, the private, the philanthropic, if they had been all on the same page in the 1950s or the 1960s, you might have had something approaching what we're talking about now at Moccasin Bend, but the city was far more into manufacturing. It was the dirty city, as Walter Cronkite told people on CBS News in 1969. You might have had Moccasin Bend earlier, but you wouldn't have had this Moccasin Bend and the potential for what we're talking about now with Forever Moccasin Bend.
Very good point, Ray. I think that just coming from the, you know, as a very, feel very fortunate to be leading the Friends group now, the National Park Partners, the consolidation of the two Friends groups. But, you know, there's that old saying, if you can see farther, it's because you're standing on the shoulders of giants. And I feel like people like Shelley Andrews and the three of you that I'm very privileged to be on this meeting with today got us to where we are. It was kind of the right place, right time, the right group of people working on it. And you know, Shelley, we're getting so many contributions to the campaign in memory of Shelley. I think she was really pivotal in organizing a lot of the community energy. So I just wanted to take a moment to recognize that she did a tremendous job, and I'm very happy to carry the legacy forward.
Ray, I want to say something else. I haven't talked to Sally about this, but I will right now because I talked to Mickey about it. I believe we're going to get a bunch of new elected leaders in the next 2 to 3 years. We're definitely going to get a new city mayor. We may get a new county mayor. We're going to get a lot of new, we're going to get a new sheriff. So we've got to push in the next 2 years for another advancement, like getting the firing range off the bin, addressing the non-conforming uses, and then move. This thing is, it pulsates. You go in when there's opportunity, and then you have to retreat sometimes when things aren't possible. Mm-hmm. But right now, I think we're about to approach a period of advancement with new leaders that if we can get to them early enough, and I think even in the philanthropic sector, we got to dig down to the next generation because it's our generation, guys. We're getting a little bit older, Mickey and Sally, that our kids have got to come into this and embrace this too. If we can transfer this passion to them for this, and then new leadership pops up, this thing can happen faster. And I really would like to see, while I'm still around, all of these things take place where the non-conforming uses come out and this becomes fully realized, where we have an archaeological site down in the Hampton Village, that we have the visitor center and all these things. So we still got to keep the pressure on, guys, for the next generation to kick in.
Boy, I couldn't agree more, and you're exactly right. We sense this bulge, really, of new leadership that is coming in. And I'm just so glad that we can talk about it and get ideas and topics out that heretofore were sometimes controversial about the non-conforming uses, having to make sure, you know, that we weren't proceeding too fast or that we were being unfair or giving everybody a say, really, in what was going to happen out there. And I think we're there now, Zach. I think your example, your leadership example, has been exemplary because there was nothing tentative about how you approached this. It wasn't that you were going to test the air and see which way the wind was blowing. The minute you found out about this, as Mickey said, it was obvious. Your imagination just, boom, popped with what it could be and would be. It was such a visionary time. And to have a congressman who jumped on so strongly, so quickly, I think it set the tone for what has come since. And I think we're having really productive discussions now. And I don't think we feel the same hesitancy, really, to tackle these stronger issues that talk about the non-conforming uses over there. I think that that's part of the conversation now, and rightly so. And thank you.
Besides, while we're on non-conforming uses, we know that the firing range is being, there are plans there, and it's been public information that the hospital is looking at a rebuilding of the facility, and that determination has not been made as to the location. But that's another thing to keep in mind, and a lot of things have changed in mental health since the days when you had to be out in the remote rural areas for the sake of the patients. But there might be another opportunity where we can still maintain having a hospital in the Chattanooga area, which is essential, but perhaps not necessarily have it right on the toe of Moxon Bend. So we need to be alert to many different opportunities, and there is a way to get a more cohesive national park out there as time goes on.
You're here.
This goes back to another word that came to mind in one of our earlier conversations, just listening to the history that Moccasin Bend represents and the history that you all helped to make in bringing Moccasin Bend to where it is today, and that is perseverance.
It's taken a lot of that, hasn't it?
I have a quote, which actually I gave on my previous interview talking about perseverance. But in 1944, the Chattanooga Times, in an editorial, said a park on Moxon Bend can be as great an asset for Chattanooga as Central Park is for New York City, Hyde Park for London, Champs-Élysées for Paris, the Prado for Vienna, the Cascina for Florence, the Corso for Rome, the Prado for Madrid. That's mixing a lot of metaphors there, but I think it does serve to illuminate, perhaps with a little bit of hyperbole, to throw a few words around as to the potential for Moxon Bend.
They said that 75 years ago, which speaks to the perseverance.
Yeah.
But it really could add for our downtown experience that quality of a reprieve, an escape, an afternoon, you know, in the middle of nature. Oh, man, it makes me feel so good about the future.
And, you know, but to go back to what Mickey said, all of those fabulous, world-famous gardens, we still have something that they don't. I don't think that any of the ones that Mickey mentioned tell the story, the history of a continent that ours does. And we talk, as I said earlier, we go all the way back to, Zach said it, paleo, all the way through the Native American and the use of the bend when the Indians lived there and had their village there and raised families and created beautiful artifacts, many of which have been sadly removed from the bend by relic hunters. And we just hope that those artifacts are in private collections and that the day will come that we have our visitor center completed on Moccasin Bend and some of those items can be returned. But in the meantime, very soon, we will have a big gathering place on the bend right off Hom Road where the pavilion will be built. There'll be adequate parking for school buses and families, picnickers, visitors, restrooms, maps, orientation information that gets people sort of used to what is available there. As Zach said, there's an opportunity for hiking, and Mickey alluded to the learning of our local history here, the Civil War, and the whole Native American culture. So it's really, really going to be almost a history park, not a flower park and not a sculpture park and not a festival park. It's going to be a boots on the ground, sort of hiking up to see where the Civil War cannons were implanted up on the top of the ridge there on Stringer's Ridge during the Civil War, and a walk over to where the Native American town actually existed and to see, you know, information that teaches us about how life has evolved through the millennia to bring it to, it's a miracle that we've got 800 undeveloped acres really in the middle of what is becoming our new downtown footprint, to go back to what Zach said about the riverfront development that is on the drawing board even as we speak.
And when we talk about this as a history park, it is a history park in the heart of nature. Talk to me more about the views of that nature and what this project, what Forever Moccasin Bend, what opening the gateway will provide as a window into the nature that's out there.
I want to quote again what Dr. Duane King said one time, and it just touched my soul. He said, throughout the history of man, people have gravitated to where the plains and the water and the mountains meet. And he said, that is a unique place called Moccasin Bend in East Tennessee, where the mountain range ends, the river comes through, and the plains end there. And so as we draw young people and draw people into this place and they embrace this knowledge that from the beginning of man, people have gravitated to that. And I'm telling you, when you're down there at Hampton and you're standing there, the majesty of Lookout Mountain, and the river has always, it's not been as wide as it is now because of the TVA dam system, but the river's always come through it. You feel it. And so drawing people to that, Ray, is part of the challenge of this, because as the world develops around it, this, we can protect it and we can leave it as it is and we can interpret it and we can create educational opportunities and outdoor opportunities. I mean, when we started this whole process, just when I got involved 25 years ago, you didn't have paddle boarders coming around Moxon Bend on the weekend all the time. And now there's paddle boarders and kayaks and people on the water, off the water, walking, hiking. I even said on the last call, a bear came across it, you know, just 2 months ago, all the way from Lookout Valley, across it from Walhatchie, you know, across, it forded the river and across Moxon Bend and forded the river again, end up downtown Chattanooga. This is a unique place, even without what we plan. With what we plan, it becomes a forever dream.
The bear can see the future.
Right.
One little aspect of it that hadn't been publicized too much, I think Zach is right, it just has unbelievable potential. But there's an interesting story that relates to the Underground Slave Railroad. And there was a slave, Jacob Cummings, who worked on the James Smith farm in the 1830s. And he got information that provided a way for him to work his way north. But anyway, long story short, he took an old Indian canoe in July of 1839. He made it across to Williams Island, and then on further there, he ended up in Canada, and he became an active agent on the Underground Railroad and helped other slaves work their way north. But, you know, it just is a reminder that the variety of stories at Moxon Bend. We were briefly talking about the flora and what amounts to the flora and the fauna, but, you know, mastodons, the animals go back prehistorically, remains, the variety of trees and other vegetation out there. It's an unbelievable test tube or microcosm or display of nature and history that's there. So I guess we could all go on and on and on about it, but it does have unbelievable potential.
You know, one thing we haven't mentioned with all of the history, you can actually go there today and walk part of the Trail of Tears across Moccasin Bend. There is a marker there on Pineville Road that if you visit the bend, you look for the historic marker there, and you can actually walk down, and there's a trail that leads west right across the bend, and on the other side, again, right on the banks of the river, there's a beautiful bench where you can sit and just contemplate what happened there when the forced Indian removal took place. That's another story that has a great deal of interest to people today that want to know more about that. So it's, as we've said, you know, it really is a time capsule.
And that's where the ferry actually crossed the river to Lookout Valley. That was Brown's Ferry. And on the other side, on the west side of the river, we now have set all that land aside as well, going to Brown's Tavern 2, which has been set aside. But that land on the west side is all part of this historic Trail of Tears location where we came through. We continue to find Native American artifacts all up and down the river. Right now, there's new findings and historical significant assets at the Riverport Industrial Park. I know of a site right now where they just found more Native American artifacts from the Trail of Tears, where they brought all of the Native Americans there before the Bell and the Binge routes took off, headed west. And they crossed right across Moxon Bend, as Sally said. And we have all of that already documented. That's where the Park Service can take you right now and show you where the Trail of Tears actually crossed by land and then by water from there.
And with Forever Moccasin Bend, the potential for even more discoveries, this unlocks that potential for generations to come.
You know, it really does. And the fact that we are now in a very active way, part of the National Parks organization. I mean, it's not just the local philanthropic and political leadership and civic leadership that we are tapped into. We are in lockstep with a national organization that's revered all across the United States. They really are a cornerstone, a really essential piece of what we're doing here, and the fact that they are in partnership with us gives so much credence and credibility and strength to what we're doing here. We're not on our own.
We're the only archaeological unit in the entire national park system.
That's right.
Pretty incredible. And Sally, to what you're saying, that this project, this gateway project specifically, where we're working on opening the entrance and creating these new visitor amenities, the National Park Service at Chickamauga and Chattanooga applied for a special Centennial Challenge program to help achieve the sort of the public part of the public-private match. Mm-hmm. And it's a very competitive process, as you can imagine. There's 423 or four national parks across the country, and everyone has a project that they want to put in. But the fact that this one seemed so relevant and it had very early community support from the local foundations who put up the match, the private match, early to say, we're going to help. You know, if we get the public money through the Centennial Challenge Park Service, the private money will be there. And that early commitment and just the very special nature of this place made it receive this Centennial Challenge Award to have a 50-50 public-private match. It's pretty awesome.
How do you all envision the timeline of opening the gateway in the next few years with the money that is raised and needs to be raised yet?
Well, once we have the gateway funding secured, which our goal for that is by the end of March 2021, we'll have the complete private money raised to match the public funds, and the Park Service can get started on developing that gateway site. I would say by, you know, if all things go as planned, that by the spring of 2022, that gateway site should be complete. And then the next phase of the Forever Moccasin Men campaign will be kind of dependent on the relocation of the firing range off of Moccasin Men to the new regional law enforcement training center that's planned and already invested in. So that's going to happen. It's just the timing is hard to predict exactly how and when, but once that's relocated, then the new hiking trails can come in along the river at the base of Stringer's Ridge, and with the spur trails going up on top of the ridge to see the Civil War earthworks and just the incredible views there. So sort of that river to ridge is sort of phase two. This river to ridge trails will be the next part. And then ultimately a visitor center would be sort of the continuation of the Forever Moccasin Men campaign. We'll go there at the gateway site. Everything will already be ready for it to be placed, but that's more of a longer term. The Park Service really needs to have more operational funding to be able to staff a new visitor center. So we'll be sort of working on all these things in parallel, but I would say the gateway site should be opened by the spring of 2022. Hopefully we'll have the hiking trails in a few years after that, and maybe by the end of the 20s have a visitor center. That's our goal.
And then how much of this, because you mentioned National Park Service funding, how much of this is contingent on federal action, federal funding to take the next steps right here in our backyard?
Well, the federal funding for the gateway site has already been identified, so that's a win already. I think the trail system will be less probably of a fundraising haul there, public and private. I think we can make it happen for fairly, I feel confident in that the funding will be there for trails. I think recreation is becoming a bigger focus for the Park Service in general. Increasing access to outdoor and healthy and recreation opportunities is definitely a focus area. So I believe the funding will be there for that. The real key is going to be the visitor center, the operational funding for Chickamauga and Chattanooga National Park to increase to the level it needs to increase to be able to staff a visitor center. That's going to take an effort on all of our part to really push for more operational funding for the park. I think the construction of the actual facility will be, you know, that's probably a few million dollar project, but it feels doable. I just think that it depends on how the priorities change in the next 10 years. For right now, the big focus is on deferred maintenance. As Congressman Wamp said, the Great American Outdoors Act is going to pump a lot of money into helping the parks catch up with deferred maintenance. And once that's sort of gotten to where it needs to be over the next few years, then I think the shift may come to, okay, now we can look at new construction projects, even though it's going to cost maintenance. Maybe we're caught up on some of this other backlog, so we can think about a construction of a new facility, which has really not been a funding priority in recent years. So
let me be clear-eyed about this. It will take federal elected leadership support to get that visitor center built. It may be necessary for local government to pass resolutions in support of this so that the federal government feels the pressure. that this is wanted by the communities. So that's another strategy that we should engage in the 20s, so that whoever that elected leadership is will push for the funding for the visitor center. All these other things I think will happen out of natural order and necessity. Like you said, the Park Service itself will, they'll program and fund trails and amenities because that's their job. The visitor center is going to require elected leadership push. And we're losing Lamar Alexander. He was a strong guy. So, and we may get new federal leadership over time, but we need them to know that local government, local private sector, local philanthropic sector support this. So continuing to build that public support to push them into this is going to be essential, because we got to get that visitor center built by 2030, in my opinion, in order to meet our schedule. Agreed?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great.
Perfect.
In the next few minutes, as we wind down here, I just wanted to focus on memories and experiences. And each of you have the opportunity to share memories and experiences that have been top of mind these past few weeks and these past few months when it comes to Moccasin Bend.
I'll go first on that, because it was back in 1982 when I first went to the Bend. I'd actually never been over there. I knew about it. I didn't really understand what it was. But then after I was appointed on the Moccasin Bend Task Force, an archaeologist took us over to see the Bend and to explore the property and to understand what was there. And he took us to a town that has been dubbed Hampton. And that was where the Indian village was back in the 1500s during the contact period. And there were holes dug all over the Bend. And he said, these are relic hunters that are coming in illegally and removing these artifacts. But there was one really large hole there. And it was so big and wide, he actually got down into the hole. He said this originally was the floor of an Indian house where they lived. And their custom was, when a member of their family died, their body was interred in the earth underneath the house and covered over. It was their burial custom. So he said, what we are seeing here is actually a grave. And he then took his trowel and scraped away a ring of blackened earth about 6 inches deep that ran around the perimeter of this hole. And he said, this is the charred remains of this village. This village was burned entirely to the ground. And at that moment, it was as if those people who lived there were present and they heard us and could see us and were begging to have their stories told in such a way that it was authentic. It was not just fiction. They wanted their stories to be understood for succeeding generations. And indeed, their heirs, who now live in the West, a lot in Oklahoma, have been very much a part of this all the way. We've always been in touch with the tribes to keep them front and center and understanding what we're trying to do here and wanting their help and their participation. So that's my first memory of the Bend, and I'll never forget it. It was a very moving moment for me.
I'll take a stab at it from a purely personal standpoint. My wife Eloise and I were at our rehearsal dinner in June of 1966, and my great aunt Sophie Long, Miss Semperry Long, was there. And normally you have a round of toasts where the different guests at the dinner toast the bride and the groom. Well, that wasn't what Sophie had in mind, and she gets up and begins a discourse on the beauty of saving both Moccasin Bend and Cameron Hill. And my parents had to put her down, but Sophie had that imagination. This is kind of crazy, but she there at about the same time or a little earlier had commissioned a study for Moccasin Bend, and that recommended a swan lake, an azalea garden, hiking and bridal trails, athletic fields, a horse show area, polo grounds, a band shell and stage, a large swimming pool, and a bathhouse. Now, all of those things are not going to fit in the national park, but I think it is a reminder that Moccasin Bend has stirred these ideas and emotions and dreams, and that's the torch that we're trying to carry on now. And I think it is essential that we fulfill Zach's dream, that we do this in the next few years, and we give it another hard push. but it doesn't hurt to dream, and I think it's part of our legacy.
You know, to pick up on what Mickey just said, Ray, this is real extraordinary because I'm in a building that my father designed, my late father. He's been gone for 10 years, but in the 60s, he was a president of Tennessee Society of Architects, and he joined, I believe, Mrs. Z. Carter Patton, who was actually the head of the Historical Society, in some kind of a lawsuit in principle to stop the development of Cameron Hill. Because my father, as the head of the architect, said that on any place like that, if you're going to build buildings, they should be a monument. They should be the city hall. They should, you know, like the Romans would put their most impressive buildings, not an apartment project or whatever, on Cameron Hill. So this conservation historical DNA, Mickey, that you and I share comes through on Moxon Bend, because the vision is the highest quality of all. And then one other quick anecdote. I told Tricia on the last call like this about the paintings on the floor of the rotunda of the Capitol of Hernando de Soto discovering the Mississippi River, and literally countless. I literally took like 17,000 groups of people over 16 years through the Capitol, and small groups, large groups, and I would always tell them that that exploration, the De Soto exploration, came across Moxon Bend on their way to the Mississippi River and was able to talk about Moxon Bend. But one time I was flying with President Bush, 43, on Air Force One to the 100th anniversary of the Great Smoky Mountain National Park. And on that trip, he came back where the members are sitting, and he said to the group, "Who represents the Ocoee River?" And I'm like, "I do. Why?" And he said, "Well, Laura and I went down it on our way to be in Victor Ashe's wedding in Knoxville years ago. And it gave me the opportunity to tell him." And I said, "Well, while you're here talking about the Ocoee River, let me talk to you about Fran Minella and Moccasin Bend." And I told Bush 43 about what we were doing here. And, you know, he obviously signed the legislation, but he didn't know. And be able to tell the President of the United States what we're talking about here today, that was pretty special to tell him, you know. And then Lamar, you know, we took a boat ride with Lamar when he came in as a senator, and to be with this group and to tell this very prominent U.S. senator about this, former governor, you know, about this, and then for him to catch on to it. This, again, like Tricia said, is we're all only as good as those that came before us. And if we can just take the 2.0 version to 2.2 while we're breathing, that's our job. So we've still got a little bit of work to do, but that's great.
Hear, hear.
Yes, second the motion. Push on.
Tricia, how about you? Memories, experiences coming to mind now?
Well, you know, I certainly new to the game, relatively speaking, compared to my very esteemed panelists who have been at this a long time. But, you know, I remember when we were consolidating the two Friends groups, the Friends of Chickamauga and Chattanooga National Military Park and the Friends of Moccasin Bend, and I had started as the director of the Friends of Chickamauga and Chattanooga, and my counterpart at the Friends of Moccasin Bend, this young man, Michael Rozelle, he said, "Have you been to Moccasin Bend?" And I said, "No." And at that point, I had lived in Chattanooga in this area since 2004, and this was 2017, and I still had never been to Moccasin Bend. I mean, I had kind of been driven through it for various reasons, but never stopped and really taken advantage of any of it. He said, "Well, I'm going to take you on a little hike." And we went, he took me up there on Stringer's Ridge where those Civil War earthworks are. And I'll just put a little caveat out there that this was permission. This is an area that's not normally open to the public because of the firing range. I don't want anyone trying to do this on their own. But we got up there, and I just, kind of like what Sally was talking about, the feeling that you get of how many thousands of years have people stood on this ridge, and you can see the earthworks. You can see on your way up these little sort of dug out areas where the Union soldiers slept in the side of the ridge. They had kind of made their little dugouts right in the ridge to camp there. But when you're up there, you just feel like, this is a magical place, that this is a place where so many people have been before and looked out at these incredible views and looked out over the river. And what were their stories? What were they thinking? Would they ever see home again if they were a soldier during the Civil War, or if they were passing through as a Paleo Indian tribe? You know, they came to that point maybe to hunt on top of the ridge and just taking it all in and maybe thinking about being there for a season. So all of the memories that I have are pretty recent, but I do remember feeling like what we were about to accomplish with the convergence of the two Friends groups into National Park Partners and taking on this big project for Moccasin Bend, sort of our first big thing after we consolidated, was going to be an incredibly special thing to be a part of. This whole series of interviews has really brought that home for me, of just the depth of passion that the community has had and the leadership of Zach and Sally and Mickey and the Friends groups over the years and making this happen. It's truly incredible.
And where can people go online to find out more, keep up, and support?
ForeverMoccasinBend.org is our campaign page that will show you the diagram of what's planned for the Gateway site, give you ways to contribute. And we're certainly going to be following up with everybody who's been a part of this for the next phases, the River to Ridge phase and the Visitor Center. As Zach said, we need to really continue to harness this energy that's coming about. People are very excited about the Gateway. How do we translate that into the bigger, longer-term vision of Forever Moccasin Bend and all the phases to come? But all of that's kind of outlined on our ForeverMoccasinBend.org page. And we still are very close. We only have about $80,000 left to raise for a $1.1 million project. We're in the home stretch, so every gift counts, and we love if people want to be a part of it at any level. This will be your chance to have your name on an incredible legacy for Chattanooga.
All right.
You're here.
All right. Tricia, Congressman, Mickey, Sally, thanks so much.
Thank you for hosting us.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Thank you all.
You're listening to Scenic Roots on WUTC. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.